Blog Talk Radio. All too often these days, the factory whistle is falling silent in America. But there is a way to get American workers back to work. Start buying more American-made products. Now, a Michigan-based company is leading the way in this movement to strengthen our economy. It's called AmericanMadeProducts.com. AmericanMadeProducts.com is more than a way to purchase American-made products online quickly and securely. It's a way to get our economy moving in the right direction. Go online or call and speak to a live customer service representative. AmericanMadeProducts.com, a family company based on the belief in the American worker and the quality of American-made products. If you're an American manufacturer, big or small, and would like your products on our site, contact.
All right, Scott. How are you doing?
Well, hello. Hey, I'm doing fine, and how are you doing?
Well, I just sent you a message telling you we are on, but you are here, so that's good.
Yeah, I've been here.
Even if you get here before the commercial, I won't be so nervous, you know what I mean?
Oh, I gotcha.
We got two emails. I was going to wait for the kids to get here, but I don't know if they're coming. So this is really addressed to you. And I want to say hello to the guest in the chat room. It says, hello, everyone. I have been listening for years now, and I really enjoy your show. Wonderful information and just plain talk. You hit the international right between the eyes every week. I feel like Donnie. I get fired up when Brian. No, that's what I was going to read to Brian. I get fired up when Brian goes off. I'm down here in Spring Hill, Tennessee, and her name is Tammy. Well, hello, Tammy. This one's really to you. I can read these later if they come. Howdy, guys and gal. I'm in Arlington, Texas, and we listen every week on the line. As a matter of fact, you can hear the show on most lines every Monday. Brother Scott asked how we feel working every Saturday? Well, it's hell on people. Everyone is dead tired. Most have used most of their vacation time off. Two folks passed out on the line last week. I do not know why the UAW allows this, but this made me realize what you have been saying all along, that we need new leadership in Detroit. Some lower tiers have been fired or just quit. They're lower paid, and these lower paid folks are on the worst jobs there is in the plant. Nothing about this is fair to the UAW people who work their ass off every day. Just keep going. Keep doing the show. People are waking up. I know it's frustrating to you all, and I also feel why beat my head against the wall, but I keep going and talking to everyone I can. Respect to you all. Thanks from Big Jim, Arlington, Texas. There you go.
Wow. Well, thank you, Big Jim.
You did ask, a question a couple weeks ago or something about Arlington and they're over, you know, overtime.
Yep, because they're on a mandatory 6-day work week now.
Big Jim.
Well, hello, everybody on Arlington that's listening to the show on the line. And for the folks on Monday morning, howdy, y'all. But it's hard. I mean, well, Don, you know, when you work your overtime, how hard it is, you know, through the week. Now you had a day of rest taken away from you.
Right.
Now it's not just, you know, work two, get one off, or, you know, or work two, get a couple off. Now it's working every Saturday.
Every Saturday. I couldn't do it. I mean, I could not do that. I remember when I was in quality, I would my job wasn't covered on third shift, so I'd come in at 3 o'clock. I worked 12 hours for 9 straight days. And let me tell you something, buddy. I was beat. I was done with that. I said, what am I doing? I was so tired. And by the ninth day, I was just mumbling to people. I wasn't even talking straight. So it does get to you. It really does. And I had Saturday and Sunday off. So
right.
I had to recover, but I was just beat. 2 days does not. And I had an easy job. I was in quality compared to beating my head on the line every day. I was in quality. And I was, I felt the tiredness and just wore out. I can't imagine tightening down bolts all day or putting axles on frames every day, 6 days a week. No, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you got, you know, everybody needs to understand that we all do our own little part. It depends on which department that you're in. You have, right. You know, the paint department. You have a body shop. You have chassis one and a chassis two. You have different areas for trim. And of course, the final line, you know. And anybody who knows how cars or trucks are put together, you know, they get welded together in a body shop. And then they go to that part, goes into the paint process. It comes out and it goes through a trim where they put all the interior together and they end up putting it on the frame and it, you know, it goes down the line and gets all the final assembly done to it before they drive it up and hopefully as a saleable truck. But why it's up in trim, the frame is being assembled. It's, you know, and they do that all upside down, so all the underneath components are added and it's flipped over, and they add, you know, the motor and the transmissions and the transfer cases if you have four-wheel drive and whatnot, and then those come together and they go down the final line and then they're finished.
All right, you're making me tired.
Everybody will, right? But you know, there's people that, you know, like Jim said from Arlington, there are jobs that are rougher than other jobs.
Right.
And usually, you know, the low seniority or the temporaries unfortunately get put on them.
Yes.
You know, I remember, I know you haven't been gone long enough that you could still remember putting in the dash. Probably the worst job upstairs.
That's got to be the worst job. Yes, absolutely.
And then downstairs, you know, you had the motor set, the transmission. I mean, you're working with somebody else, and
right,
you better have fingers out of the way when them things come together.
Absolutely, you better move. Better move in tandem with your partner, or you're in trouble. Let me get Brian on real quick. Okay, Brian, you're on. So, just
hey, Brian.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, you're only
not
about
too bad.
You're getting better, Brian. I'm proud of you. I am. Damn.
Actually, I was waiting for at least 3 minutes, so I might have been like maybe, 4 minutes late?
It says 8 minutes,
oh,
but they're counting minutes. Who's counting minutes when you have a...
you
know. Hey. Brian, hold on, Scott. You fire up Tammy like you fire up me. We did get two emails, one from Spring Hill, Tennessee, from Tammy. Says, hello, everyone. I've been listening for years now, and I really enjoy your show. Wonderful information and just plain talk. You hit the international right between the eyes every week. I feel like Donnie. I get fired up when Brian goes off. I'm down here in Spring Hill, Tennessee. Thanks, Tammy. So you got to mention, I'm not the only one that gets beating my head against the wall. It's like listening to a hard rock record you really like, and you can't help yourself when you start going off. So there you go.
Thank you, Tammy.
And then did you hear the one from Big Jim?
No, I didn't.
All right. See what you miss when you're late, young man? Let's keep that in mind. Let's keep that in mind next Sunday. This is howdy, guys and gal. I'm in Arlington, Texas, and we listen every week on the line. As a matter of fact, you can hear the show on most lines every Monday. Brother Scott asked how we feel working every Saturday. Well, it's hell on people. Everyone is dead tired. Most have used most their vacation time off. two folks passed out on the line last week. I do not know why the UAW allows this, but this makes me realize that you have what you've been saying all along, and we need new leadership in Detroit. Some lower tiers have been fired or just quit their lower paid folks. These lower paid folks have the worst jobs there is on the line in the plant. Nothing about this is fair to the UAW people who work their ass off every day. Just keep doing, keep going, doing the show. People are waking up. I know it's frustrating to you all, and I also feel why beat my head against the wall? But I keep going and talking to everyone I can. Respect to you all. Thanks, Big Jim. So there's Big Jim. Thank you, Big Jim and Tammy.
Thank you, Jim.
At least Tammy, you didn't say he was sexy when you watched the videos of him. Thank you very much for not saying that. Jeez.
Yeah, thank you, Tammy and Jim.
Well, I think we made
it.
We're going to change the show to the love connection, I think.
But I could tell you my thought on the alternative work schedules. I mean, the purpose of the alternative work schedules was to keep people from coming together and fighting the wrong. So if they know that you guys are on ABC crew and you're working 6-10s, and whatever little time you got with your family, you don't have any time to set up any type of recourse against your leadership for screwing you over. So the alternative work schedules were set up to keep the membership from organizing. Really, that's what my belief is. So, and it's working because nobody has the time to come out and organize against the company or the leadership for screwing them over and lying to them. So, you guys are occupied with being on the line, 6-10s or however many hours you're on the line and how many days you're on the line. But I mean, when do you find the time to organize and fight for a better life? You can't. You just, it's hard to fit that time into that schedule. So I think it was set up on purpose by your leadership and by the company. So, I mean, that's my take on that. So,
well, I have to agree with you somewhat on that because, like at my facility, we're on 3 8-hour shifts. So that factory runs for 24 hours, 6 days a week. And they will end up, like they did last year, they'll be putting in some voluntary Sundays. They wonder why, you know, production has downtime because the machinery is down. You don't get enough time to prevent a maintenance or fix machines. Don knows as well as I do, they've been band-aiding things for years.
For years.
And it's, I have to agree with you as far as, when you're working 6 days a week, or if you're doing the alternative work schedule, or the alternative work schedule, where you do like the split shift, where like they do on like they used to do in Spring Hill, 1 week it's days, the next week it's second, the next week it's third. It's hard on you physically, mentally. It's hard on your family life. It, like you said, it limits your ability to effectively communicate to other people and coworkers on different shifts because you got there's things to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's family things to do, and your schedule is never the same.
And it affects those people that, you know, depending on what crew you're on, a lot of these people can't even go to the union meetings.
That's true.
Exactly. And funny you should say that because our first union meeting, I thought was today, but it's actually scheduled for next Sunday. The first day after everybody's forced to work 6 days a week. So,
be a lot of seats in that union hall.
I think there will be. And unfortunately, sure. I won't be there either. I have a family obligation down at Kalamazoo, but I'll be back for time for the show. I would love to be in there because I agree with Don. There's going to be a lot of vacant seats do that. I'll be standing room only for people who want to complain. But brought me on something because
that will happen. That'll happen in about a month or 6 weeks. Maybe the next union meeting or the meeting union meeting after that, it'll happen. People will come in there when they fed up and tired, and they'll raise hell. We used to have many fights on the line back in the day when we were working 9 hours a day or more, two shifts. We had two lines going, though. I was on the Suburban Blazer line at that time, and it was 6 days a week, but it was two on, one off. But you were still wore out. It was hell building these damn Blazers and Suburbans, I'll tell you. And people just got frustrated. Best friends would go at it on the line, man. And one of them said, we did it just to get the hell thrown out of here for 2 weeks because we are wore out.
Right.
And so that happened a lot. They were actually, I seen some fake fights. I seen some good knockdown drag out fights, but they made up some fights in there just to get 2 weeks off. And that's because they were almost out of vacation time. People were wore out. We did that every year. It was two on, one off. And
the difference is now is the union ain't getting some of these people back. So you're taking your chances with that. You know,
absolutely right. You are so right. What, you know, or the union drags this thing out for God knows. I know people have been out for years that should never been out in the first place. But
the fact that the union is taking advantage of these TPTs. I mean, these alternative work schedules are here to stay. And like Scott was talking about, for the people that, you know, you're on the alternative work schedules, but you're on the swing shifts. You know, if I recall during contract time, the international leadership said they were going to come back a few months after the contract was ratified and relook at that. And I haven't heard nothing about it since. So, as far as I'm concerned, the international lied to you because they haven't came back to look at this and they haven't done anything to change it. So you guys are still going through these.
You can thank yourself for that, because if that happened, I think you'd have a group of people in front of Solidarity House. You see what I'm saying? If they change that contract now, you wouldn't be by yourself. I'm just saying.
No, I agree. Yeah, I mean, just like the healthcare, right? I mean, you know, here you ratify a contract with open-ended healthcare in there, and the international says, well, we'll figure it out as time goes, and then here it is. Well, I don't know how many months after the contract was ratified, and all of a sudden we got hit with that, $300 for Chrysler. We got hit with the $300 deductible for a family of two or more and $150 for a single individual. So, I mean, that was after the fact. So, I mean, you guys want to keep voting on these open-ended contracts, offer this little bonus that you get that's going to be spent within the day anyways and taxed. I mean, that you're selling yourself out. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you guys, when you vote on these contracts, you got to use common sense. If you're going to sell out for a couple thousand dollars, then you get exactly what you asked for.
Right.
That's right.
And to ricochet off what Brian's saying, if you're going to sell it for a couple thousand dollars like that, chump change for a bonus, then give me an actual meaningful raise in my base pay. Something's going to affect my pension and my Social Security in the future. Something that's going to mean something. They don't do that, you know. And we're going to try to talk about that, you know, later on the show a little bit. You know, Ford's boasting it looks like over a $10 billion profit for last year. They said Chrysler's doing okay. They said General Motors is probably right up there along with Ford, or maybe a little bit past. But something that, you know, I want to touch on now, but we'll talk about later, is Chrysler's Sergio Marchionne got himself a little bit of trouble this week. And I know you both know about it, but it was over emissions. And we'll talk about that later because that's going to be interesting because, I don't know, something really big could happen out of this or it could just be that little slap on the wrist. I don't know.
And not just that, there's talks again about General Motors and Chrysler or Fiat Chrysler Automotive merging again, and or even a Chinese company buying Fiat Chrysler Automotive. So that's the rumors back in there. It's made it in a couple weeks. So even that's
yep.
in there.
I think for us, and for people who listen to this show, that if it was a Chinese company that bought out Fiat Chrysler, I think the products as we know, the lines that we know or have come to know from Chrysler and Dodge and ultimately the old Mopar brand would be forever changed. I hope that if Sergio is going to sell that, at least he'd sell to somebody here stateside. I'm sure there are other people who could buy it and probably run it better. I mean, it'd be kind of hard not to get somebody to buy it because you got a good deal with the union already. If whoever buys this, you got a great deal with the union. So
I know during the bankruptcy, whether it was the media or the government, you know, all they kept reporting is we got too many automotive companies out there. So, I mean, shit, they, as far as I'm concerned, they could liquidate the company and break it up. So, I mean, that's a good possibility that could happen as well.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Don and I, and you probably have heard of it, of the Carlyle Group. You can get somebody like that. We refer to them as Raiders. The company that Mitt Romney used to belong to, same kind of company. They come in, buy up a company, piece out the best parts to the highest bidder, and then bankrupt the rest of the company and let the taxpayers pay the difference. Usually your pensions are gone, and in 401ks, which are supposed to be federally protected, which may not be. Depends on how well your union negotiated on your behalf in that. Some people, they're not protected, federally protected under their 401k language. So it's possible some people can lose everything. You're right. That's a possibility. What would you say are the two most valuable assets at Chrysler?
Jeep and minivan.
Really? I would have thought that the Ram truck would have been up there.
Yeah, I would put the Dodge Ram up there as well, but I think if anything, because unless you're selling to a foreign company, General Motors and Ford has already got a truck. So I think the biggest thing for them would be that Jeep and that minivan.
Right.
But if they were to sell to a foreign company, all three of those would be a big item. But
right. Yeah, you're right.
I truly believe that they would make more money from liquidating the company if they were going to do it versus selling it outright. So
right.
It just depends on, you know, how Marchionne is feeling at the time because he's already made his money. So he really does. I really believe he doesn't care what happens.
Is Fiat out of the woods now? Is Fiat financially stable? Do you know?
Well, there was an article, I think last week, if I recall, Marchionne was talking about Chrysler or Fiat Chrysler Automotive almost being out of debt. So I think the goal was by the year end, they plan on being out of debt.
Gotcha. So, you poor folks there at Fiat Chrysler America have been working hard making the Jeeps, the minivans, and the Dodge Rams to help Marcioni get Fiat out of trouble financially. You know, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I agree with you, Brian, that it's a possibility. And absolutely, the Jeep is iconic. You could sell the Jeep brand off on its own, kind of like what Jenna Moore did with the Cadillac. Cadillac stands alone on its own. The Lincoln. The Lincoln stands alone as its own now. It's a possibility. Speaking of Jeeps, by the way, I like your Jeep. I saw a picture of that last week. I like your Jeep.
Oh, the Cherokee?
No, was it your yeah, the regular Jeep.
Yeah, I like
the black one.
Yeah.
Oh, you sold that?
Yeah, I got rid of it.
You replaced it with the Cherokee. The Cherokee's
right.
A nice vehicle. Expensive,
yeah,
but nice.
My wife kind of she kind of forced me to sell it. She's told me I was too old to have a toy, and I had to look like I had accomplished something in my life. So she pushed me to get the Cherokee. So it is what it is.
You PW bastard, you!
You should have taken your wife for more rides with you in that Jeep, and you probably could have kept it.
my daughter loved the Jeep. It was my wife that I think she was concerned because, you know, there's a lot of females. It's a chick magnet vehicle. Just put it that way.
Yes.
So.
Oh.
Oh, that's
okay.
Funny. I love that. That's great. I love it.
Now,
made my night. PW bastard. I want Tammy in Tennessee to realize what a PW bastard he is. He talks like a wild man on here, but he's a calm as a kitty cat when he gets off. Oh my, that is good news.
Hey, sometimes you got to save face and just, you know, toss it in. You know, it is what it is.
Yes, anything you would like to say, Brian, you just go right ahead, big boy. That's some good stuff. You got balls of steel in front of all these people, huh? I'll tell you that. But I won't let you forget it. That's for damn sure.
There's a difference. I have to sleep with this one, so my eyes got to close at night. So.
Well, I'm going to say it is. They may close at night. You just wanted to open up again the next morning.
Damn right. Oh, boy. I never thought.
Okay.
I never thought Brother Brian was a PW.
Next subject.
Oh, he ain't. He's a peacekeeper.
Yeah.
He loves his wife. Right?
Of course he does.
He's keeping the peace.
Yes.
But,
hey.
That's a good comeback.
Don't help him out.
It's just not going to help.
I'm going to help him out. I'm going to help him. We're going to get back on subject here. Hey,
too late.
Have you heard any more about the Wagoneer? I heard that the Wagoneer was back in talks again.
I heard the same thing, but I don't know too much about it.
Well, there was two different options there because they were talking about bringing back the Jeep Wagoneer, even with the fake Woody side and stuff, but they were going to put a souped-up, Hellcat package like? And it was going to be like $140,000. Well, now I'm hearing they're going to just bring back like a regular version of the Wagoneer, which would be kind of cool. And I'm also hearing that Jeep is talking about bringing back a truck. What a great idea.
Well, now I knew the truck was coming back, but I didn't know about the Wagoneer.
Yeah. I don't know. When did they kill the Wagoneer? Was that back in the 70s, Don?
I thought the late 70s.
Yeah.
Late 70s?
Trying to think. My friend had one. Loved it. He loved that.
They're bigger than the Cherokee, right?
Yeah, this one was. Now, I don't know. They made different versions of it, but yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like a Suburban, like a small Suburban, right?
It was nice. It had it was loaded. It had everything. It was very nice. That's a nice vehicle. It ran and rode great. And why they stopped building it, I don't know.
Huh.
Advertising. I didn't see. I remember thinking, they don't advertise this thing. You never seen it, you know, on advertisements anywhere on TV or book magazines or whatever. You always seen other vehicles, but not that.
Right.
But the market sucked.
Speaking about something that I haven't seen in a while, just going to throw this in here. Just down on the corner, down the road from me. Brian will appreciate this, but you will. A 1972 International. Four-wheel drive. All original metal. 80,000 miles. Has the original 345 on it. It's looks like a 4x4 with the manual four-wheel drive and the lock. They got to get out, lock your front hubs out.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
that.
And it's got an 8-foot box. They put a 3-inch lift on it. I don't know if I like that, but they put a 3-inch lift on it. There's no rust on it. It's amazing. And you can tell it's original, so.
For the young people that probably weren't even born yet, yeah, they used to be metal in these vehicles. So don't be.
Yeah.
When Scott says metal, I want to explain to the young people that, yeah, they actually built vehicles very good back in the day.
On steel frames,
right.
Not unibodies.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. This thing here, I looked in the dash. Oh, by the way, back then, we didn't have a bunch of plastic on the dash. The dash was mostly metal. The top part was, padded. Yeah. And, it's pretty tough looking old truck, but.
How much is it worth for it?
$12,000.
That's about what it's worth.
But it's rare.
He's right there.
It's rare.
Right there where it's worth. So you could probably talk him down a little bit, but that's about where it belongs, $12,000. That's a tank, man. That is a tank. That's a rolling tank. That thing's heavy.
Now, speaking of rolling tanks, the reason I talked about that was because Jeep's going to be bringing a truck back. Do you remember the old Jeep trucks?
Yeah, I do.
Them were tanks also.
Yes, they were.
Just amazing vehicles. The neighbor down the road's got one. And then he's got one of those, I don't know what to call it. Is it a Chieftain? Is that what I'm thinking? A Chieftain?
I don't know.
I don't know neither.
He's got a couple of the older.
I'm a fossil.
I think one of them it's about like the size of a Dakota.
Yeah.
But it had an 8-foot box. I think they called it the Chieftain. It wasn't the full size Jeep truck, but was a smaller version of that. And he's got one, but it's been in his garage for a couple of years now. But now I need to see it. But solid heavy metal, all those trucks that was built back in the early 70s were, plus I think they were the best looking trucks that they had out then, for all of them, especially the Chevys, I think.
Bring that back, that'd be cool. Yeah, I haven't seen one of those in decades, and it'd be nice to see one. I love old vehicles. That's when they really made vehicles. You could actually work on them, too. You could actually work on them. What a beautiful thing that was.
Yeah. If you had an 8-cylinder, one of those, you could put your feet, dangle your feet down off the side of the fender rail while you're sitting on it and work on your truck. Work on your motor.
Yeah. You can't do that.
I could do that with a Jeep.
Yeah. And the Bronco and the Rangers coming back. So, Jesus,
yeah.
I'm hoping the truck's coming.
The Rangers coming back in 2018, from the article I read, if we read the same one, I believe it was Auto Week. I think that they're saying the Rangers can come back next year or 2019, and the Bronco looks like possibly 2019 or 2020.
Yeah.
And it's based on some concept arts, and I'm sure they built some, and you have to wait till you see. The Ranger will debut in 2019, and the Bronco will be 2020.
I never liked the Ranger anyway. I never did.
No.
Little Tonka Troy.
Right. Again, for us that can remember, back in the late 60s, well, I mean, Brian's not as old as us, so back in the late 60s, you remember the Bronco 2s?
And I was
a
hippie.
Almost like the International Scout.
Yeah. That's when that stuff was coming up.
Yeah, that was
rock
a cool truck. Yeah, rock and roll.
Rock and roll,
Wolfman
getting
Jack,
it.
Right?
Hmm?
Yeah, Wolfman Jack. Well,
now that Bronco that they're coming out now, is that going to look similar to the old Bronco, or is that looking more like an SUV?
Retro to the old Bronco.
Yeah, it looks like a Bronco.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think it's actually more retro towards the 70s style Bronco than the 80s.
Yeah, and it looks smaller than the original.
Like the old 60s, like the old Bronco 2s were, right?
Yeah. Right. Forgot about
The old Bronco 2s in the 60s were very similar to the old International Scouts.
Yep. That's right.
Which were tough little vehicles, too.
That was a tough vehicle. And why they stopped building that, I don't know. That thing could plow through anything. I remember a neighbor when I was younger, 67. Yes, 1967, folks. You were still in your daddy's sack. My neighbor had one of these, and one of those. And, boy, we had a snowstorm. That thing plowed right through all that crap. Badass vehicle, I'll tell you that. I was impressed.
Yep. Well, speaking of impressing, Ford has reaffirmed a target of $10.2 billion for 2016 pre-tax profit.
A lot of money. So when they offer all you folks $8,000 next time you sign a contract, I want you to remember something. And remember I told you this, and everybody has told you this, but I'm going to tell you again. They don't give you $8,000, $10,000, or $12,000 for nothing. Believe me, you're going to lose five times that amount signing a contract, voting for one of these contracts. You're going to lose five times that amount every damn year.
And I'd like to add that profit sharing is based on how many hours you've worked as well. So
those
that got FMLA or whatever, if you miss some time, you're not going to be seeing the full amount of that profit sharing.
No, you're absolutely not. I know a guy that didn't get any money. Flint truck. He absolutely didn't get a dime. Last 2 years I worked there, he didn't get anything. He would go on sick leave. He never worked. Everybody was giddy as hell getting all this money, and he came in moping like hell. You know who I'm talking about. I won't say his name.
Yep.
Just think about these plants like Shap or Warren that go down for retooling, you know. No fault of their own. Now they're not going to get no profit sharing.
No, because you're not accruing no hours. You're not there. You're on a layoff.
Right.
So you're not getting that.
The union set up in the company's favor, and you guys are totally getting screwed.
Yeah.
See, you guys saw it out. Didn't get the details, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. Don't look at your neighbor next to you if you voted for it, because it's your fault. So, but before I left, the last contract I voted on, nobody. I didn't vote for that. I didn't vote for it. Bullshit. Give me a break.
Most people who voted no on a contract, you ever heard? Well, boy, awful funny how it passed with such a large margin.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
I'll never forget that. Not one person admitted voting for it.
This is going to be right up Brian's alley. This is a shout out for you, Brian.
You ready, Cam?
Last week. maybe she's riding in a Jeep. I don't know. This last week we celebrated the 80th anniversary of the sit down strike in Flint.
Yeah, sure did.
Okay.
So when I say right now Brian's alley,
it is definitely up my alley, but the problem is these people don't have that same mindset nowadays.
No.
And that's where I'm going with this is
history.
What happened? Yeah, what happened back in 36, 37, and part of 38 at the sit-down strikers? Brian Keller.
Oops. I was playing that tape of that, that lady that was talking about Fisher Body, Chevrolet Fisher Body, number two. I was going to play the tape.
Oh, look at, it ain't really long, is it?
No.
You could play that here in a second if you wanted real quick. It's only, about 3 minutes long?
Yeah.
People like Doc and Brian and myself and Rebecca, and people like Danjen and other people who follow the show, and Mary Sprinkowski. These people that, you think we're a little spunky or we're a little high-spirited, that's what most of these sit-down strikers were. They realized what they had to fight for. It was for their livelihood. It was for their family. And they realized that they had to stand together in solidarity. I don't mean that just as a word, but as a movement. They stood together in solidarity. People got broken bones, busted skulls, their blood, they swept the tears. They fought for this stuff for us. And what have we done in the last 20 years? We've basically given back everything that they fought for.
Screwed to retire.
Not just that. The people are fighting everybody else's battles. Because it really surprises me when you look at these alternative work schedules, the amount of UAW people that find time to go down to Washington, D.C. and protest with the Million Women March and against Trump or against the $15 minimum wage increase or whatever. They got time to sit there and fight for these things, but they can't even fight for themselves.
That's right.
I don't get it that you live down the street from the Solidarity House or you work close to the Solidarity House. And you can't even fight your own leadership that's screwing you right in your face.
Right.
But you'll fly in from all over the country to join this stupid march, 1 million woman march or whatever the hell it is called, or you name the cause, they'll fight for it. They'll get passionate about it. But then they go to work and, okay, you can screw me again. But as long as our government knows I was fighting for against them, fine, but you won't fight against the UAW leadership. It blows my mind too, Brian.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
You want to play that clip real quick?
Yep, hang on. Ready?
No.
Let me know if you can hear this, because I don't want to waste time.
Cause trouble and discourage us. We call them General Motors goons. Our lives were in danger.
Can you hear this?
Yep.
They were actually prepared with guns and stuff right in the shop, the General Motors men. They were just waiting for our men to do something so they could get at them. That's where this bull run started. There was quite a battle there that day.
They're throwing tear gas into the crowd right here.
The radio had announced to the city of Flint that a riot had broken out down on Chevrolet Avenue in front of Flint Fisher 2, and a revolutionary situation was developing, and you can imagine what an electric shock that was for Flint. And we were down there with unarmed men, just hinges, paving bricks, picking up the fire bombs and throwing them back, and the tear gas and the rest of it. The populace, including my parents at the time, the populace of the city drove down, just as they do for a fire at any time, to gather in back of the police to watch, to observe this. The police said, get back, it's dangerous, but they were there to observe. The men were speaking out to the people beyond the police lines, explaining what we're fighting for, what had happened, how the battle broke out. When this happened, we had only the sound car broadcasting to those people. We had nobody on our side. Victor Reuther and many of the others were there that night on the sound car. Men. And finally, Victor came up to us and he says, maybe we're going to have to lose this battle, but we're going to lose the war. He said, but the batteries and the sound truck are running down. And I said, oh, let me speak then, Victor. And he looked at me and he said, well, I guess it can't hurt any. So I got up on the sound car, and I was desperate. And I decided to appeal to the women of the city of Flint at that point. The men had done a marvelous job all evening long, but I got up there and I said, women of the city of Flint, break through those police lines and come down here and stand with your husbands and your brothers, your sons and your sweethearts. I said, they're firing into the bellies of unarmed men down here. The police are cowards. And if they're cowards enough to fire into unarmed men, they're cowards enough to fire on the mothers of children also. And this was electrifying because they thought that there were no women down there until this woman's voice came over the line. And believe me, if you think you can't speak when you get in a situation like that where it seems like it's a life and death matter, you can find your heart just comes out through your mouth. You can find the wherewithal to express your emotions. And the women did break through that night. And I it was such a great, great thrill. And one cop pulled a woman's coat right off of me. She went out of that coat and started marching down. And as soon as women started marching down into the center of the battle, the police didn't want to be accused of firing into the backs of unarmed women. God forbid. And that wound up the battle that night.
That's a wonderful tape, Scott. Thank you for posting it.
Well, you're more than welcome. You have to stop and think about that for a little bit.
Hold on for a second. For people that want to see the pictures or the video that goes with the voice, you can go to Workers, Workplaces, and Unions on Facebook.
Correct.
Okay.
I think Brian posted that too, didn't you, Brian?
No, I don't think I had it.
Oh, I'll have to share it to you so you can share it also. But one woman's voice, one person, do you hear that? One person calling out, asking other ladies to come and help to support your husbands, your boyfriends, or your sweetheart, or whatever. Or your sons to come out, you know, or your father to come out and help because the police didn't want to shoot the women in the back because they were unarmed. One person, all it took was that one person to lead that.
And you see on this video, police beating the hell out of men, the men with billy clubs. They're on horseback.
Yep.
And, it was a terrible thing, but the men didn't give up. The women joined the men. And in Fisher 1 on South Saginaw, women were, they took over the plant and shut the plant down. And the women, the wives, the girlfriends, and mothers all made, you know, lunches and made sure they could eat. And they were handing stuff through the window. So that's not going to happen today. That's just not going to happen today. It's unfortunate.
There's a side note that you should say that, Don, that them women were getting supplies, food and water, to these people who are occupying these buildings. Now, I'm not saying that we all need to go out and occupy the buildings. Okay, I can't control people. If that's what you want to do, go do it. But it was illegal then, and it's illegal now. But they understood what they had to do. They wanted to stand up to what they felt was tyranny.
Right.
The union was much different back then.
Well, not just that. During that time, you got to remember, that's the time they were establishing the union as well. So,
yeah.
By saying that, when we look at today, the union is already established. And the reason labor fought so hard back then to establish a union was to keep these companies from abusing us. And so now that we have a union established and the foundation and we have a strike fund and all this, and the difference is back then the union's leadership stood side by side with their members.
That's
today's
right.
Union leadership does not stand side by side with their members. They stand side by side with the corporation. And how do I know this? I mean, come on. The leadership had GM and Chrysler stock. They became stockholders. They took over the VEBA, the health care for the retirees. I mean, these are things that a union's not supposed to be doing. They agreed to contract out their union brothers and sisters with contract houses and unionize them behind our backs. They agreed to TPTs. They agreed to the tier system. This is something that the union was not founded on. So our union, when General and all them, back when they were getting rid of housekeeping, said it's best to save the body and cut off the limbs. Well, they were straight. They were right when they said that. Because they are cutting off the limbs. We are the limbs. And
right.
Back then, for those wives and for those husbands that took over those plants, that was needed back then. Today, what is needed is to fight our union leadership, to reform the union leadership. And the only way that's going to happen is in front of the Solidarity House, because we established this union to fight these very companies that we work for that are taking advantage of us. These companies are making billions on billions of dollars, and they got the money to build plants in other countries. They got the money for this. They got the money for that. The CEOs are making just outrageous packages. The shareholders are making great money, but the labor's being left out, and the internationals letting
right.
that happen. Our wages are going backwards. There is no equality no more. The Solidarity House does not support equality. So that should tell you whether you're a tier one or a tier two or a TPT or retiree, we're all being sold out.
Right.
So your fight needs to start off with your leadership, because if you don't
right.
got control of your leadership and your leadership has gone rogue and they're looking out for themselves, what do you think is going to happen to you? You're all going
right.
to get picked off one by one, and it's going to be like a revolving door. They're just going to keep bringing in TPTs.
Right.
And they're going
to thin out. Walter Reuther, I got to interrupt. Walter Reuther would pick up a picket sign and a stick in the other hand, and he'd walk the picket line with you. He'd fight with you. He understood the power of a strike. Dennis
right.
Lynn shows up and tells everybody, oh, you're doing a good job. We're out here fighting for you. Well, gee, brother, instead of just talking, that's cheap. Why don't you pick up a picket sign and walk the beat with me here for a few minutes? And let me see how much you truly care. That isn't the case. Like Brian said, we got business partners. Cindy Estrada said it very clear going into contract times with Kathy Clegg.
that we're partners in that.
Right.
That's not what our contracts say. That's not what the law says. You know, and Brian, that's absolutely right.
I want to tell you, new people, young people, I've been on strike, and I remember thinking, well, this is going to be a long strike, but it was a 1 or 2 day strike. It was all set up with the UAW International and the corporation to make us feel like if we didn't take a contract, we'd be out a long time. That's what this is all about. It was a game, and the UAW was a leader in this game. Scott, were you at the truck plant when we went on strike?
No, I was over at Grand Blanc Metal Fab.
All right.
They first started out with the Metal Fab. Remember, they were moving the dies, and they had all the local leadership and the people from Region 1C at that time. They all got over there, and they hooked up arms, and then they come out with the so-called support strike for the truck plant.
Right.
And, you know, and then lo and behold, at the end of 2 days, we got to go back to work.
Right.
What do you mean? This is going to be bad for us. We can't stay out like this. And
They came to some kind of agreement or something, and that's the game they play. We lost 2 days of pay. We didn't get anything. UAW was not going to let us stay out, so they would have to pay us a few dollars.
Right.
They weren't going to do that.
Right.
Remember the last time
we went?
Yeah.
We were out 3 days. Remember that?
Yes,
and
I remember.
You didn't get no strike pay. You know, it's crazy.
Not a dime. Not a dime. It was a game. It was because there was people in our plant and other plants that thought like Brian and thinks like Scott and thinks like I do. We fight for what we got to have. So they made it look like, the UAW made it look like, well, we did everything we could. It will be a long strike, so we're going to agree. And then everybody gets afraid and they go vote yes for this crap. And we just want to let people know that's one of the games they play. They had no intention of letting us stay out more than a week. The UAW is not going to pay us a dime. Come on.
Right. Well, here's another game they like to play. And it's been a while. Brian, I'm sure if you think about it, you kind of remember the Pontiac strike. And remember...
Oh, yeah.
Certain individuals
went to jail.
Were collaborating with.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they did. Donnie Douglas went to jail, and some other people ended up thinking they were going to get out of it and ended up having to go to jail. They collaborated with management and union to get their kids hired in. So they extended the strike out, which cost the corporation billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
So they could bring their kids in, and kind of find out that, unfortunately, at that time, that local, not the members, but the leadership had been kind of skimming some funds. And that was brought into light, too. And here it is again on January 10th, Associated Press put this story out. Prosecutors say a former union official and insurance broker have been charged after they have defrauded a health care plan of about $6.6 million. Sergio Acosta, a former president of United Auto Workers Local 2326, which is down in the St. Louis area, and a broker, Lawrence Ackerman, were charged Monday with conspiring to defraud the Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield and the Union's own plan. They had created two shell companies to market insurance to hundreds of people from across the country not employed by them. And then later on, these people go to use this plan and they find out they're not eligible. What a despicable thing as a human being to do to somebody else in this day and age when healthcare costs are going sky high. And for you guys to, these two individuals, and I'm sure they're not by themselves, they had support, which I'm sure that'll come to light too, but to take advantage of people who are trying to get healthcare, you know, and it's sad. Notice I said the former president of the United Auto Workers. So we'll see what happens with that, because all you had to do is go and feel bad for his wife. But General Oilfield was doing something similar to that when he got caught. He never did go back into Solidarity House. They kept his office there until he retired, and ultimately he.
It was him and James Hardy. And what baffles me is when that whole thing came out, the International just tried to sweep that under the rug, and there was no repercussions for it. And the fact that the membership didn't stand up to that and demand some type of repercussion of them getting their pensions pulled or whatever, I mean, something should have been done. Because they sold out on their own membership by doing what they did, by selling these jobs out. That proves my point to where the International says it's best to save the body and cut off the limbs. And they sat there and sold two-tier jobs out. They were selling out tier one. They were doing whatever they can to push us out by bringing in more two-tier. And that that shows that they don't support equality.
No, absolutely.
Right. That and the despicable, and that is despicable, for a high-ranking union official to sit there and sell off temporary jobs in such a way. Now it should have been thrown out of the UAW. They should have brought charges against him for what he did. I don't know what the law is, but I'm pretty sure it was illegal, you know. And
well, of course it was. They weren't claiming any of that money, so they were lying to the IRS. That's right there. That's one. And,
right.
And it's unethical. I'm sure there's something in the bylaws or in the Constitution, you know. So, I mean, what they did, I mean, they should have been fired. They should have lost everything. From the company side and from the union side.
Well,
but see, that's my point, is with these people, when they get caught, they just sweep it under the rug, see? And there's no repercussions, and they still get to keep their pensions and all that crap. When I do something, I'm getting fired. I'm getting walked out. And then I got to play hell to get my union representatives to get me back. And then when they're not getting me back, then I got to file charges. I mean, that's the kind of crap I got to go through as an average union member.
That's right.
But people like James Hardy or General Holyfield, they didn't have to go through none of that.
No. Well, again, it goes back to previous discussion of how the International Executive Board is ran. If you bring a charge up against one of those, they are self-governing, which means that if you brought up a charge against General Oilfield, it's up for the rest of the IEB executive, you know, the International Executive Board, it's up for them to determine whether, for in that instance, whether General Oilfield is guilty or not.
If it has any merit.
Even if it does, they say it don't. Even if it did, they said it still don't, and there's nowhere else to turn to because they are the highest governing body of the union, and they have decided.
Well, I guess we could have went to the federal agency and filed charges.
Well, at that time you still had Walter Reuther's grandson, Alan, was still down at the Washington, D.C., and he was very good speaking terms with the head of the National Labor Review Board. And they decided what went and what didn't. So
So you could have had a great case from there at the Murray Building in downtown Detroit, and they could have went up to the regional area, and they said it's a good case, and sent it down to Washington, D.C., and these two gentlemen talk, and all of a sudden there's nothing there. They dropped the case.
Well, it makes you wonder how many Masons we got up at the International, how many we have at the National Labor Relations Board or any other government agency, because, you know, that good old boys club are looking out for each other, and a lot of people don't know that the union is made up of Masons, you know. So, I mean, for us that aren't Masons, are being taken advantage of. And until we reform this union and this leadership, we're going to keep getting the same old, same old. And it's going to come to a point that don't be surprised if you find yourself on the other side of the fence looking in.
Wasn't it Albert Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, you know?
And see, that's my point. I was talking about last week, you know, with WS and WS and Auto Caravan and some of these people that have been in the union 10 times longer than I have, and they're spinning the same wheel, getting the same results. And they're off fighting all these other battles instead of fighting what they need to be fighting. And so their idea of collapsing the union is the wrong idea, because you collapse the union,
they win.
Everything that we built up will be gone. All the assets, the strike fund, everything will be gone. So, yeah, you beat the union because you're mad at the union for failing to represent you, but now you ain't got nothing to take on the company. So instead of collapsing the union, all you need to be focused on is leadership reform. So it's either going to happen at the UAW convention, which I don't believe is going to happen, because how many times have we sent delegates down there and continue to get the same shit time after time? So my belief is the membership needs to confront it at the doorstep of the Solidarity House by any means possible, whatever it takes to get control of our leadership. That's what we must do. So if it consists of removing these people physically, then that's what we must do. But you got to remember something. These people are people like you and me. They only got power because we gave it to them. Now, we have the power to take that back. Now, it's up to you guys if you want to confront this. If you don't want to confront this, don't get on these union pages and start crying about how bad you got it in the plant. Don't complain about alternative work schedules or safety issues or attendance issues or whatever, because it's obvious that the union is not there to represent you no more. It's become a contract house. They are supplying labor. They're not supplying representation no more.
Right. Just do what we tell you to do. Just do what we tell you to do. Correct?
That's what it comes down to. They are working for the company. The UAW leadership is side by side with the company. It's obvious. I mean, if you guys don't see it by now, I don't know what else to tell you. But I'm telling you, if you guys keep sitting on your hands, you're not going to get nothing for it.
Oh, yeah, you will. You're going to get shackled.
Yeah, you'll get shackled. There you go. Grab those ankles.
Coming. Well, I have a little bit more of a positive note. This last week, Governor Andy Cuomo from New York, did. I know, but I'm just saying this surprised me that he is pushing a Buy American initiative. He announced this week that the mandate support for American workers and manufacturers that they deserve. The UAW Region 9A Director, Julie Kushner, said that during the State of the State speech, January 11th, the governor unveiled details of the Buy American plan. Sweeping legislative reforms require that the state procurements over $100,000 to give preference to American-made goods and products. That's a good thing. Whatever my opinion is of the governor of New York, that's a good thing.
Right.
But for every good thing, there's something that's going to react to that, and it has to be a bad thing. And the bad thing is, in light of the little Twitter war, the tweet war that's been going on between General Motors and President-elect Trump, it come out that General Motors is going ahead to move the production of its revamped GMC Terrain to Mexico from Canada and expand the production of the Ingersoll, Ontario plant, Chevrolet Equinox, reflecting the growing popularity of the compact SUV. Now, currently, they both made the Ingersoll plant in Ontario, but that's going to change. Also, with the revamping of the new Terrain and the Equinox, they will be smaller. Just so you hear that, they are going to be smaller than the 2017 version. And there is no plans to offer a V6 with either one of these vehicles as of now. Also, usually there's a Chevy, a GMC, and a Buick version. The Buick version is being made in China. How come we don't have our membership over in arms about them making vehicles in China and importing them here to the United States? Our brothers and sisters are out of work. Just a question, you know what I mean? It's crazy. We're importing vehicles from China now. And what does that do to us? That makes us directly compete with our own company that's operating out of a different country. And I still just can't get my head around that.
And not just that. Here the company's getting cheaper labor, but the price of cars ain't coming down.
Oh, absolutely not.
Absolutely
not.
No. Can't have that.
And if you was to go look at this new Buick, it only seats 5. It is small. I mean, it is definitely smaller than a Terrain, than a an Equinox. It's small. So, I don't know what's going on. Like you said, Brian, they're making all sorts of money. They're at record profits. And they choose to do what they do to us. The UAW leadership allows it to happen to us because they say they're partners. Far cry from Walter Reuther. Far cry from Walter Reuther. So,
See, Walter Reuther would have led his membership against the company for a better future. This leadership is not leading us nowhere. They keep telling us we got to choose to pick our battles, but I mean, when are you going to choose the battle? I mean, these companies have been making record profits for some time now, and we're still going backwards.
Right.
And I just don't get if this union is not going to back their membership, then I don't understand why the membership is not going to stand up to their leadership and say, hey, look, the power lies with the membership, not with the leadership. We gave you that.
Right.
That position to lead, and if you're not going to lead, then you need to leave, and we're going to replace you. So the membership needs to stand up to the leadership, and that's the bottom line.
Well, the part of that is fear. Some of that is
fear of what, though?
the retribution, because the leadership at Solidarity House has wielded so much power against us, the members, now. And that's not my opinion, folks. All you have to do is look at one of the big three contracts, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, and this story you just sent to me, you want to talk about that for a second?
I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Well, Brian just sent me this, and I was oblivious to this, so I'm going to have to share this, but this week. But the problem was, I started reading this article. They knew about this last year. They knew about this back in December. What happened was, I take it WXYZ is out of Detroit, correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
Channel 7 News. Okay.
Yep.
They've learned that there's been a data breach, and it's compromised the identity of unknown number of Michiganders, including some at General Motors. They said the automaker confirmed that they're aware of fraudulent unemployment claims involving GM employees. Corporate alerted some employees that hackers were using their names and social security numbers to file claims and collect. GM also confirmed an ongoing local and federal law enforcement investigation. They spoke to one of the victims, a GM employee, who said he was alerted by human resources of the hack shortly before the new year.
Mm.
He was told to GM that workers at the big three automakers also fell victim with Ford and Chrysler, but they were unable to confirm that. So they're you know, working aggressively with the Michigan State Police Cybercrime and the U.S. Department of Labor's Office and the Inspector General to sit on this issue. And it's like, if you guys knew about that weeks ago, I hope you contacted people that were affected to let them know something was going on. Because that's going to screw up their unemployment. If they had it coming, because they said it was fraudulent claims. So maybe people are working and somebody's claiming their name and their social security number to take money out of their account. Everybody has an account when you work for these larger corporations like this, because that is an insurance policy that you pay into and your employer pays into. You have to work so many hours and earn so much money for you to be entitled to make a claim. So this is serious business, folks. I mean, this is really serious business. And it looked good.
On top of that, you had Snyder take $10 million out of the, the unemployment fund, and just
right.
To balance the budget. So I don't know if you talked about that as well.
No, I haven't. And you know, this is his last year. He's on his way out, too.
Yeah, he's screwing everything up on his way out.
I mean, he put the poor shoes to the retirees, you know, like Don and other people we might know, and some of the listeners on the show who are retirees from here in Michigan, that this wonderful governor of ours decided to tax your whole pension.
Yeah.
So every time you get a pension check, you get to pay the state of Michigan their due share of the tax on your pension money. There are other states that do this.
There's some states that don't do this, and there's some
absolutely.
That, since you're not working, they take a percentage, like they take a quarter of what a working person would do and pay. But
right.
No, we pay the
right.
full shot. We pay the full shot to the state of Michigan, and I can't wait till this bastard gets out of office. I really can't. This guy's a moron. 7.2 cents on a gallon of gas, and
yep.
Where's that money going to go? He said, oh, it's for the road fund. You know what happens to all these special things, like the lottery is supposed to help schools. They closed schools up north. They couldn't even finish the year because they ran out of money. Ran out of cash.
And our roads aren't getting any better either. But,
hell no.
You know. I guess we'll switch it up a little bit here.
yeah, I did. I'm sorry.
Ford has now come out and said that they are going to do a full redesign on their F-150 pickup for 2018. So that ought to be interesting overhaul. Chevy just did theirs, and GMC just did theirs for 2017. So for once, we're ahead of the program at General Motors. Normally, it's Ford that redesigns first, then we follow suit. Been that way for years, hasn't it, Don?
Yeah.
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 So they're going to do that. It said that there's going to be a bunch of tweaks, redesigned front end grille, wheel options, bolder seat colors, first in class technological offerings, a brand new diesel engine, among other enhanced features designed to reach a broad cross section of truck buyers. So, get ready to see your new Ford F-150. I'm sure it's down at the auto show right now, so if you wanted to get a peek, might be able to understand how that worked out. Also, at Ford Motor Company, you have the Cree, which, if I remember right, that's an Indian tribe, owned Wolf Speed. They have the new electric vehicle collaboration with Ford Motor Company, it looks like. Creators of Wolf Speed, who announced this month that they would be collaborating with Ford Motor Company on modules that make electric vehicles up 10% more efficient than what's currently on the highway. So here we go. As long as I can remember, we've always done our own work. Now we're reaching out to competitors to help us with transmissions. We're reaching out to competitors to help with motors. We're reaching out to small companies and certain individuals to help with our design and our technologies now. Back in the day, you used to hire an engineer, and you had an engineer do your electrical system. You hired another an engineer to design the chassis. You had another engineer or designer to help with how the body looked on the vehicle. It appears we're getting away from that. That's going to be a lost art, just like our skilled trades at Fiat Chrysler, General Motors, Ford. They're trying to revamp some of the skilled trades. They brought some new people in the skilled trades at my facility. Kudos to local leadership for getting that done. But I'm feeling it's a little bit too late because a lot of these guys are all to retire, and when they leave, they take that knowledge with them because they've not had the time to share that knowledge with these young people or the people who are new into the trades.
All right.
Don knows exactly what I'm talking about there. I'm sure,
yeah.
Brian, you've seen it firsthand also.
Yep.
You know, you come in, you see a breakdown. You got management and 15 other people with management down there trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
You got Henry Hubcap walks in there and looks over his shoulder and says, well, what's going on? They said, well, we got a breakdown here. We don't know how to fix this, but we're working on it. And he says, well, if you start my time right now, you know, I'm about a half hour early, I'll help you with that. And they say, well, go ahead. We'll start your time right now. And the next guy, he says, give me your channel lock nut, that big flathead screwdriver. And he climbs up where he has to go, and he comes back, and 5 minutes later, the line's running again. What'd you do? You just agreed to pay me to start my time. I didn't agree to tell you what I did. But it was that simple. That's my point that I'm getting at. And there was something simple in there, and they were overlooking it because they didn't understand the machinery. And that's a lost trade. It's going to be gone.
Yeah.
We're hurting for...
I do
I know
agree
Brian,
with.
Yeah, I know Brian and people like Mary Sprinkowski at her plant. What I'm saying is... And all the big three, or the D3 as we call them now, they're hurting for tradespeople.
And it's not just something you can go and read in a book or watch a YouTube video on. Time to learn this stuff. And we're running out of time. That's all there is to it. You're just running out of time. Not like this show. We're running out of time. But
yeah.
It's a lost trade. It's a lost trade. And I can't think of anybody better than like me. I've got my 30 years done. Don's retired already. Brian, you've got what, another 15 to go?
Oh, no, 10? No. Not 11.
Come on.
Oh,
don't
you got 11 to go.
He's not
gonna...
What the hell's wrong with you?
I'm sorry, Brian. All right. Well, I just try to say, if somebody was just starting out and you're tier two and you have the opportunity to go into the trades and get that pay increase and learn a trade, do it while you're younger. Do it while you can, afford to do that right now, while that's there. Do it. Take advantage of that and try to get in the trades if you can, because I read an article somewhere this week, and if I could find it again, I'd post it. They said that over 75% of our tradespeople in the United States are eligible to retire or are retiring this year. They only have enough people coming into the trades now to only cover 25% of that, everybody.
Sure, well, absolutely. We used to do all things in-house, all General Motors components, all everything was made by General Motors. And we had a cushion room. We did the cushion, you know, seats.
Upstairs.
We didn't have recall. We didn't have recalls when we did that. Very, very. You never seen a recall. Never even heard of recalls until they started buying all this other crap. Now, one reason you see Ford and Chrysler going through the same thing is because they buy from the same people we do. All the airbags and brakes and things like that. We used to do, our springs come from Mexico. They're stamped made in Mexico. We used to do all this stuff. General Motors. They never had any. We have 48 people, by the way, in the switchboard. Not one of them got guts to push one. That's fine. As long as you listen, it's fine. You found out Brian had to sell his Jeep to, I won't say that. No, I can't say that.
Look, we all have our weak spots, and you know,
my beautiful wife is one of his weak spots, and he lost his nut sack.
Just one.
He sold out. That's all there is to it. We're going to give him his PW membership card soon. He'll get it in the mail. You got to sell your vehicle because sweetheart didn't want it anymore. Well, that's okay. That's all right. Tammy will understand that in Spring Hill, Tennessee. Probably broke her heart. This tough talking man all of a sudden melts like butter when he gets off the phone, off the show.
Sometimes you got to negotiate within the marriage.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, we're done, guys. I wish I could be as nasty as I want to be right now, but I can't be. Damn.
I knew I shouldn't have opened my mouth.
You should never have said that, Murray. No, we got Rebecca the Badass. Now I got to come up with a name for you.
No.
Oh, yes. It's got to happen. It's got to happen.
Oh.
We had over 800,000 downloads. We had over 800,000 downloads last week, and hopefully we'll have more I don't know how many live, because people take the show and put it on their own websites and their own Facebook pages. So I don't know how many people actually listen to the show. I just know downloads are doing great. And next week, for you people that are downloading, because you get the extra hour if you want to listen, we will have a name for Brother Brian that lost his nutsack. And I'm sorry to hear that. Had that nutsack for a long time. He gave it up. And that's fine,
well,
Brian.
You know what? That just shows I got more in common with my union brothers and sisters, because they lost their nutsacks a long time ago, too. There you go.
Ooh. Oh, man.
That was good.
Man.
Oh my God, that was that's a good comeback. I don't have nothing to say. You're absolutely right. Oh, I'm crying over here.
Maybe we can call that the Williams syndrome. How's that?
There you go.
We had a Williams operation on Brian during the week. Oh my God, this is going down the toilet quick.
All right.
Oh, I can't see
it.
Let's not go on that one.
I can't.
You gotta hit below the belt.
Pardon the
oh
pun.
Oh my God. I gotta.
Pardon the
pun. Yeah. No doubt. Down
where's
the potpourri?
Where's the potpourri?
Breaking news. Brian has lost his touchdown. All right. Okay, guys.
Well, I'm
gonna let you go. I can't even talk. Oh, hold on. I can't even see my switchboard. My eyes are all got crying over here. That was good. Well, here's Brian's new theme song. This is your song.
I got home and the door was locked. Then I tried to ring the bell. I found a little bitty note that she had wrote telling me to go to hell. I crawled in the window, I got inside, she kicked me in the balls and then I cried. Called me a name, said I lied, kicked me again and I thought I died. Took my clothes, set them on fire and hit me with her curling iron. I tried to block it with my watch and then she kicked me in the crotch again. Yeah, today's the day my wife met my girlfriend. Well, I tried to tell her, but she didn't care. Things weren't what they seemed. She had a pan on the stove full of boiling water, and my nads would soon be steamed. I tried to run, screamed for help. She hit me in the nerves with the rhinestone belt. It was like nothing that I ever felt. I thank God I wasn't wearing a kilt. She grabbed a bat from beneath the bed. She swung it once, and then she missed my head. She reared back, swung it again, and then she hit me in the twins again. Yeah, today's the day my wife met my girlfriend. Yeah, today's an awful day. Hey, my boys won't be the same. Yeah, today's the day my wife met my girlfriend.
That's for Brian, his new theme song, although he didn't have a girlfriend. His vehicle was his girlfriend. So just... There you go, Brian, your new theme song.
Just put ice on it. Just put ice on it.
There you go. Today's the day. Okay, guys. All right. I can't do this no more. We've had too much fun, and we're not supposed to have fun on this show.
Yeah. Well, when you got to go, you got to go.
Okay, we got to go. On behalf of Brian and Sister Scott, no, Sister Brian and Brother Scott. I'll get that straight. And Rebecca the Badass that wasn't here, but she was busy. So we forgive her. Brian was only 8 minutes late. We forgive him. We're a forgiving bunch of people. Right, Brian? Right? Come on.
Absolutely.
There you go. And Tammy in Tennessee, Brian apologizes for being a sissy. He broke a lot of people's hearts today. And on behalf of the show, we do apologize for that. Scott, would you like to end the show? You're crying, Scott. What are you doing over there? Hello,
you're
Scott.
You're probably getting kicked in the nuts right now.
No, I'm looking for the ice pack, you know? No, thank you for Tammy and Jim for writing in.
Big.
Wow.
Yeah, write in Faxer First, FAXER1ST at AOL.com and put in the thing, so I'll read it, about the something about the UAW or something, and I'll if it's not full of swear words like I have been getting, I will read it. And if it's not political, I'll read it. So,
Tammy, write back and get my back on this one.
I hope the hell she does write in. That would be wonderful. Hey, we found out Brian the badass wasn't quite as badass as we thought. All right, guys. On behalf of Scott, Brian, Rebecca, myself, thank you for listening, and have a safe work week to everybody. And everybody, have a good night.
Good night.
Brian, good night, guys.